LASIK Live starts now. Woo! On Talk Radio 680, WCBM, and 99.9 FM in Harford County.
All right, happy Friday. We've got so much to talk about today. We even have an in-studio guest. I don't know if we're going to have enough time. How are we going to fit all this in? We've got so much going on. Look, I appreciate you guys tuning in to WCBM 680, 9 a.m. to 12 noon for Kim Klasick Live. I know you have options, but you're here, and I appreciate you. Don't forget, make it one of your New Year's resolutions here in 2025. If you haven't already, go to the App Store, download the free app, WCBM 680. That way you can take the show, you can take the station anywhere you go. And then also you can text me through that app. It comes live here in studio. Speaking of text, here I walk in and I got a text from our friend Marty. He says, Kim, we have a new county executive. Any thoughts as DeAndre Walker takes the helm? I have lots of thoughts on that, Marty, and it's very interesting because there was a comment that was made, it was about maybe 2 weeks ago, and I'm going to try to find the audio before we discuss the Baltimore County executive spot, because I saw this coming down the train tracks, and I call it a train tracks because it's a mess and most likely is a crash here, but I saw this coming. And I don't know if anybody really caught it from the words that were being used, but I'm going to try to find that audio. And then Brian, the producer, I know how he loves getting audio mid-show. So I'll send that over and see if we can play it. But thank you, Marty, for bringing that up. Like I said, we've got a lot to talk about. Of course, we're going to start the show with the updates in New Orleans and then the updates in Las Vegas. We also have an update out of Harford County when it comes to Rachel Warren. Remember, she is the mother of five that was killed on the Mon Pah Trail. And her killer is now making a request. That if you saw my teaser on social media this morning, I'm really not happy about it. And the fact that we're even treating this illegal killer like he is some kind of citizen has me through the roof. So we'll get into that at the 10 o'clock hour. Also, five juveniles arrested for assaulting a police officer in Anne Arundel County. Got to talk about that. We have an in-studio guest. Yes, District 31. There's a vacancy for the seat. And she's going to join us at 11 o'clock. And you know what? This is a seat that I believe Republicans have a chance to flip. So we're going to talk to Latoya, a very good friend of mine. And you're going to hear from her and, you know, probably most likely if you haven't heard from her in the past, you're going to see how qualified and how great she is for this seat. So she'll be here in studio again at 11 o'clock. Then, of course, the big topic of the day, Speaker Mike Johnson. I'm sure he's sweating right now in Capitol Hill. I know that he is hot under the collar. Oh, my. Oh, my. Today he'll find out whether or not he has the votes to be the speaker. He can only afford to lose one vote. Just one. That's how slim the majority is. And when you know that the majority is this slim, right, in the Republican Party, I do not understand why we would have individuals within the party that are Trump supporters that would be undecided or voting no in a situation like this. Okay? He can only afford to lose one vote. This is the guy that President Trump has endorsed. This is the guy that many Republicans on the Hill want. Not because they think that he's just a great guy. Look, trust me, there are a lot of people still very upset about the CR. There are a lot of people very upset about Speaker Mike Johnson, the fact that he's just fine with sending money to Ukraine. Let's be honest about that. Let's not cut corners. But at the same time, I have yet to see where anyone else has the votes. This is the same discussion we had when Congressman Matt Gaetz, who's no longer on the Hill helping us out here, was ousting then Speaker McCarthy. Which you guys know I sat here and said that was also a mistake. Many of you didn't agree with me. But here we sit again. We don't have time for this. We have an agenda to accomplish. And it's a large one. The Biden administration has done a lot of damage. Democrats, progressives have done a lot of damage. We got a lot of work to do. We don't have time to dither around. So we're going to talk about that. That's also going to be the poll question of the day. Speaking of which, I do want to pull up the poll question from yesterday because I want to make sure that we get the final tally here. Also, when it comes to the updates out of New Orleans, real quick, you're going to be shocked here. And we're going to talk about that first. But, you know, the question yesterday was, do you think Inauguration Week will be secure? 49% of you said yes. 51% of you said no. Like I said, we're pretty split on that. But, it also, the devil's in the details there. Because I know many of us didn't think it was going to be secure. Some people said, oh, you know, I'm sure about it. We'll get it together. But even beyond that, we're trying to figure out, you know, if we felt it wasn't going to be secure, what could we do instead of having the usual celebration and ceremony outside? Some people were saying have it indoors. And then many of you were saying have it as is because that's what we want to show our enemies, that we are not afraid. And so I get that. Trust me, I understand 100%. 100%. Do I agree 100%? No. But I get it. I get it, and I love you, right? Okay, so let's talk about these updates coming out of New Orleans. First and foremost, we were sitting here, and they were giving a press conference, and I noted to you that I did not see Special Agent Alethea Duncan. Now, Alethea Duncan, you know, God bless her heart. I feel bad. Here, first and foremost, like I said before, if I don't have any evidence of somebody being a DEI hire, I don't call them a DEI hire, okay? Now, can you call me a DEI hire? Sure. I don't even mind. I don't care. You kidding me? I don't care. I'm a college dropout. You can call me whatever you want. But at the end of the day, this woman, Alethea Duncan, apparently she's very well educated, very intelligent, but she was removed, obviously, from this investigation. And there were many of us questioning whether or not she was actually qualified for the position of FBI special agent. And I say this because, of course, you know, she has apparently all these degrees, master's in science, chemistry, all this other stuff. She's a smart woman. I'm not going to deny that. But just because you're smart in one subject doesn't mean that you're smarter in another. Okay? Look, I think Kim Kardashian is great at making money. I think she's great with makeup. I think her little clothing line, Skims, all that stuff that she does, I think she's great on social media. Do I think that she should continue to pursue this law degree? Not really. I mean, that's not what I look for Kim Kardashian to do, right? That's not her contribution to society, in my view. But is she going to do it? Sure. She's been doing it, I think, now for 6 years. One day she'll complete it, I'm sure. But that's kind of how I feel about this. Alethea Duncan, smart woman, but is she supposed to be a lead special agent on an FBI investigation? Probably not. So she was not included at the press conference yesterday. And I noted that there were a lot of changes in what we've learned in the last 36 hours. And, of course, we talk about this all the time. You're not going to know the exact details in the first 24 hours. This isn't going to happen. But the changes and the new notes that I took here, I was very, very confused and alarmed at the differences in the story. You know, Special Agent Duncan, she told us originally that she was not willing to call what happened a terrorist event. And I still don't know why she used that term, like it was some Taylor Swift concert. Right. It's a Taylor Swift event. No, it's not a terrorist event. It's a terrorist attack. That, you know, that actually, that made me mad in the very beginning of all this. I have to be honest with you. That was the first thing that made me mad. She said that. But then also we knew at that time, and not even hours afterwards, she said that after looking personally at the ISIS flag that was on the attacker's truck. She saw it with her own eyes. It wasn't like somebody wrote it down on a piece of paper and handed her a memo as she's standing at the podium. That's not what happened. She saw it herself. And she still got to the mic and said, this is not something that I would classify as a terrorist event after looking straight at the ISIS flag. So again, wasn't happy about that. Now, here's another change that we found out as of yesterday. We were told by the special agent, Alethea Duncan, that there were more than one individuals that were involved in this attack. Not only that, she specifically said they were looking for two men and one female. Do you remember that? She specifically said she believed there are two men and a female that are responsible for the bombs, the IEDs that were placed around Bourbon Street. She said that. We're told yesterday. Now, I'm at the point where I don't know who's... who's telling the right stories or who's not? It's just so confusing. We were told yesterday by this new special agent that the FBI has put forward that this attacker, Mr. Jabbar, acted alone. That's new information. We're now told he acted alone. There wasn't two men and a female that were on camera putting IEDs around Bourbon Street. We're told now that they have video of Mr. Jabbar doing it himself. We now have video, and this is what was really bizarre. We're going to get into this after the break. We now have video of a reporter from the New York Post going into Mr. Jabbar's Houston, Texas trailer, his home. Literally, quite literally yesterday, giving a tour. I have the audio from that. Yes, it has not been sealed off. You would think it would be sealed off. Not only that, the search warrant from the DOJ sitting right on the kitchen counter. I've got the audio. You're not going to want to go anywhere. But this is why I am so confused on how any of this is transpiring. I'm not a federal agent, obviously. I'm not a police officer, obviously. I didn't attend the police academy, clearly. But I'm almost certain if you have a terrorist attack and somebody that was radicalized by ISIS living in Houston, Texas, in a Muslim community, and he clearly had made the IEDs, the bombs within this home, I'm almost certain you would seal that home off so other people could not enter that home. That's not what happened. This home has not been sealed off. There was nothing bagged up. There were things everywhere. There was no fingerprint dust. There was nothing. We're going to get into this. I can't believe the New York Post did a tour of the attacker's home within 32 hours of this attack that claimed 14 lives and injured over 30 people. But that's what we're looking at this morning. Now, I want you guys to weigh in afterwards. I want you to tell me, do you trust this investigation? Because I've got a lot of questions. All right. Good morning. Happy Friday. I know. It doesn't feel like Friday, does it? Now, it does feel like it's cold outside. That's for one thing. If you haven't been out there, don't just take a jacket. Take an overcoat. Take a blanket. Take everything. It's miserable out there. It really is. All right, we started off the show talking about the updates coming out of New Orleans. Tragedy. You have an attacker that was radicalized by ISIS, apparently made some Facebook posts, some videos, as he was headed to carry out the attack. Now, I haven't seen any of those videos, which is also suspicious for me, because quite usually, even when an account is deleted, and videos or posts are deleted, usually you have tech-savvy people that are able to get, like, whether it's screenshots or just something from it, just because they know what they're doing, and they're like, you know, little geniuses. I haven't seen anything. And so we're told by the FBI that there were three videos where this attacker, Mr. Jabbar, talked about possibly harming his family, that he said, oh, I'm not going to do that. But I am going to do something, you know, as tragic as what he did, and that is run a truck through Bourbon Street where he killed 14 people. And so we're told that those videos did at some point exist, but nobody has a video and nobody has a screenshot from the video. Nobody's seen any of this. So we have to, I guess, trust the FBI that that is the case. The most bizarre part about all this was yesterday I'm going through, looking on X, and I see Jenny Tare. She's actually been on the show. I've had her as a guest on the show. She used to work for the Daily Caller, and she was their reporter on the border. And so when we talked to her, about illegal immigration and what was going on at the Rio Grande. Well, she has since then moved on to the New York Post, and she's somebody, if you don't know about Jenny, she's a go-getter. Lots of initiative. I mean, she's on the scene, and we talked about this yesterday. She was on the scene of this guy's house before SWAT arrived. But the tour that she did the tour after SWAT and the FBI and the search warrant had already been carried out. She did the tour right after they went through everything. The video was shocking. All right. She's got it on her social media accounts. Her name is spelled J-E-N-N-I-E-T-A-E-R. Okay. and you can look her up, New York Post. I want you to see the video. I want you to see the video. There's nothing in there that will be frightening or anything like that. And you know what? I kind of want to wait to play the audio from that until we get back from this next break. But I'm going to go to the phone lines here and talk to Barbara. Barbara, did you see the terrorist homes tour by Jetty?
Unbelievable. I'm looking at it right now. This reminds me of Butler when they rent the evidence off of the roof where they shot this kid.
Oh, yeah.
I tell you, and we haven't seen any evidence of anything from his room. We've seen nothing from the phone. I don't trust this FBI with anything. I believe President Trump needs to have his own security, until we get rid of these people. This thing was definitely connected. That young lady they brought out there from the FBI, boy, she really made you feel confident, didn't she?
Yeah.
Which, I said, no, yeah. She didn't.
Yeah.
When she started talking like you know, like I know, I said, oh, no, she did not go there. But anyway, you see the level of competence of the people that they're hiring,
yeah,
which is crazy. And it's not just because, you know, anybody could be trained to do better.
Right.
They're not training these people to do the job that needs to get done. That's what's obvious to me. I mean, that's across the board. So that's why you can't trust them. But those guys are connected. They went to the same mosque. They were both stationed in Fort Bragg. And the first thing she says is, this is not a terrorist attack. How can you make that assessment?
Yeah.
And then this guy with the bald head, he was a little more competent looking. He comes out and he said, there's no connection. We have no connection. How do you know this? It just happened.
Right.
Yeah. Less than 24 hours. So you're not even bothering to do real investigations here. I don't know what to make of it, but I think everybody needs to keep their head on the swivel because I don't think it's over. I really don't. I was kind of surprised it only happened two places on New Year's Eve. I really, really am glad it only happened two places instead of across the country in different big cities.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I've been thinking about that since Christmas.
I agree with you.
That's been on my mind since Christmas. But we're going to be ready for them. And everybody just needs... I love that post you got on there, girl, with the Carrie Casillas, the only way to stop the crime.
Yeah.
I encourage everybody to go to Kim's account on Twitter.
Thank you.
Take a look at how you need to stop the crime.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you.
It's a good one. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you, Barbara, so much. Coming up next, we're going to talk about those posts. Like I said, we've got a tour of the terrorist attacker's home. Shocking, but we got it. All right. Good morning. Happy Friday to you. We're going to get right into this because you're going to be shocked. I was shocked as soon as I saw it. Just so you know, we're talking about New Orleans. We're talking about the updates from the terrorist attack. Let's not confuse it with a mass casualty as just a mass casualty. It was that, but it was also a terrorist attack, which I noticed there are some people in the media that do not like to describe it as such, but that's what it was. Mr. Jabbar was radicalized by ISIS. And just yesterday, you had Jenny Terra. She is a reporter with the New York Post. She did a tour of the terrorist home in Houston, Texas. Now, you're probably thinking, well, how did she manage that? You know, they're supposed to be searching the home. They should be dusting for fingerprints. They should be bagging up evidence. It literally, quite literally, just happened. How is she giving a tour of the killer's home? Well, that's a question that I can't answer for you. But she did it. There was no caution tape around it. There was no do not enter, do not trespass. Wasn't boarded up. She walked right through the front door. Take a listen to Jenny Terra and the tour that she gave yesterday of the terrorist attacker's Houston home. Take a listen.
We are here inside the New Orleans terrorist home. You can see that it's been clearly destroyed, the door at least, from the FBI raid yesterday. But if we walk through the home, we see some signs of what he was up to. He had this work area here. Lots of different chemicals splayed around and different electronics. This is, again, a work setup. Left receipts, just very unkempt in here. If we go over here, actually, you can see the Department of Justice documents here, the search warrant, and the property that they recorded here, which seems to be a lot of chemicals. Again, just left in disarray. There's a bedroom back here, and his, what appears to be his collection of religious materials, his Qurans, an open Quran with a passage there, as well as even the Bible here, but mostly books on Islam, and his prayer rug just to the left of me here. And if we go back, there's another bedroom here. You can see he left all these belongings, contact lenses, personal belongings, his bathroom. This seems to be some sort of workspace, again, with other chemicals here. The light's still on. Some kind of station set up here. We're not really sure what that was for. In, you know, what we can assume was also a bedroom. You can see clothes left here. And just a sign that someone was here up until those last few moments when neighbor said he left just before the New Year's holiday, saying he was done with his lease, it was up, and he was on his way to New Orleans where he would live there. Didn't take any furniture because he said his new home would be furnished. That's all we know so far.
All right, and Jenny Tare, again, she's with the New York Post. She walked right through the front door there of the ISIS attacker's home. I guess I'll say the terrorist attacker's home that was radicalized by ISIS, Mr. Jabbar. But she also has pictures of herself outside of this house. Again, there's no caution tape. There's no do not trespass sign. The door, the front door was taken off the hinges. There are chickens in the front yard. We learned that on day one, that he had chickens, goats, and all kinds of things in his yard. But she walked right into this house, and it's in complete disarray, but it almost looks as though that's just how he left it. All of his clothes, as she mentioned, the contact lenses, everything is just sitting there. Jason Roberge, he's a friend of mine. He's a lawyer out of Virginia. He did run for office back in 2018, I believe. He was making comments on the video saying, you know, that's interesting. There's no fingerprint dust anywhere. And you would think with all of the chemicals, and there, he was clearly making a bomb at one of the desks. She talked about the work desk there. But there was still, there was no fingerprints dusted there as well. This, it smells to the high heavens, is what it smells like. And I'm wondering if you trust, and this is my question to you right now, do you trust this investigation? Knowing what we know now, right? We were told that it wasn't a terrorist, quote-unquote, event. Then we find out that it is. We were told that he could have had accomplices, specifically two men and a female. Now we're told it was just he and he alone. He was a lone wolf. Now we're seeing a New York Post reporter who told us just yesterday that she arrived at the house before SWAT even had arrived. She looked his name up, got his address, and went straight to the scene because she had reported herself to New Orleans. She drove from New Orleans to Houston, Texas, and arrived there before Houston SWAT. Now she walks into the home after the search warrant. The DOJ leaves the search warrant documents on the counter. It actually notes what they took out of the home and what they were searching for specifically. Do you trust any of this? 410-WCBM-680. 410-922-6680. I don't trust this investigation at all. I have zero confidence in this investigation. Now, of course, I made more comments about the special agent that had to be replaced because she was just absolutely ridiculous. And I commented on that last night on X, formerly known as Twitter. And a friend, I consider him a friend. He's on the other side of the aisle. His name is Ben. And he said, Kim, you know, they're doing the best that they can. And I think that she's doing great. No, you cannot say that with a straight face. You can't say that. I even sent the video of Jenny Tare, the New York Post reporter, walking through his home, not even 32 hours after the attack. I said, come on, Ben. Come on. You're telling me the FBI left the front door wide open for anybody to walk through? Then they tell us they're afraid of copycats? Well, if you're a copycat, wouldn't you just walk through the front door and look and see how you made some of those IEDs? Of course. If you're a copycat, wouldn't you be looking at which parts? Because he had the Quran was right there. It was open. He clearly was taking notes. If you're a copycat, you would walk right into his house. And you would be the best copycat ever. So you're telling me, FBI, that you're afraid of that? But you leave the front door wide open off the hinges? Where anybody could walk through the house? Doesn't make any sense to me. I want you to take a listen to his neighbor. This is one of his neighbors. Now, he was in a community. Now, these homes, they were trailers. And this community apparently is a Muslim community. And that is where he decided to live there in Houston. Now, apparently, this Mr. Jabbar, the attacker that was radicalized by ISIS, 42 years old, he had been married twice. And I believe they said he had three children. But he had not been speaking to his children. Apparently, one of the ex-wives of the husband came forward to speak to police. And he said that he was displaying erratic behavior. And it was clear that he had been radicalized. And they didn't really know how to handle it. But apparently, he was, you know, making threats. And it always had to center around the Quran and, you know, his religious beliefs. So they felt as though that he was becoming radicalized. But they didn't know exactly what to do about it, because it's not like he had at that point committed a crime. So of course, you know, what could you do about it? But take a listen to one of the neighbors and how he describes it.
Moving to New Orleans?
The 31st was his last day for his lease, I think. He was moving that day.
He said, he told you what exactly
he's supposed
about
to move. He's supposed to move out. That's what I thought he has a truck for, to take in his stuff for it.
So you were under the impression that he was gone forever.
Exactly. It was time to move out. The lease was up.
And what was the job in New Orleans, he was saying?
His job related to the one he was doing.
It was just the same. He was just moving for it.
He said he got a better offer over there and there.
Did he load furniture in the truck?
Yes, I think he did, because he doesn't have anything on the truck. He left everything there.
Still there.
As he said to me, like, he has furnished home over there, but you don't need the furniture. But I asked him, you want some hands to help?
Yeah. So he didn't take any furniture when he said he was moving and the lease was up.
All right. And that is one of his neighbors. He was actually standing on the front porch talking to the New York Post with child in hand. I thought that was interesting that she didn't blur out the child's face. I thought that was a little on the irresponsible side, but it is what it is. If you want to weigh in on this, please do. 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. If you heard there, the neighbor says that the attacker told him that he was moving to New Orleans. And so the neighbor absolutely knew where he was headed, apparently. But he told the neighbor, you know, because after he brought the truck home, remember, he rented the truck from the rental company called Turo. And so he brought the truck to, you know, the neighborhood. And so I guess that's when the neighbor asked about it. And that's when he said, oh, yeah, move it to New Orleans. And then he asked if he could help him with the move. And he said, actually, I'm not taking anything with me because the home that I'm moving to is already furnished. And so that he was just going to leave things there. I guess my next question is, okay, well, do you need help moving it to storage? But maybe they just didn't talk that much about it. Maybe, you know, the neighbor was like, it is what it is, right? If you're able to see the videos or the still pictures of Mr. Jabbar, the attacker radicalized by ISIS, if you see the videos of him on Bourbon Street, you'll see he's dressed pretty nicely as he was placing the IEDs around Bourbon Street. He had them in a cooler, and he had on a nice pair of shoes, nice slacks, kind of like a nice trench coat. And he had on glasses, and he was just casually walking with this cooler. And I guess anybody there on Bourbon Street would think nothing of it, right? It's Bourbon Street. And sometimes you bring your own bourbon, I mean, you know? And that's how many people do, and if you've ever seen the Mardi Gras celebrations down there. So I'm sure people probably passed him by and thought, nothing at all. And like I said, he was dressed nicely. So at that time, that's when the FBI believes that that's when he was not only dropping off the IEDs, he was actually also checking out the street and then, I guess, the barricades and how things were blocked off. So he would have saw beforehand that he could drive that truck, the F-150 Lightning that he rented, he could drive it around the police cruiser at the end of that alleyway, which he used. So he saw that he could do that. He most likely saw how much, you know, even that officer was paying attention. So he, not that it was premeditated like as in the night before, but he apparently did all of this that day. And then that's when he decided to attack at 3:15 a.m., which is interesting because at 3:15 a.m., obviously there's a lot less people there than before midnight or even right after midnight where you had the ball drop. So I thought that was interesting that he waited till 3:15. There must have been a reason why. Hopefully that, you know, will come out when we get any kind of the investigation completed here. Right now, I feel as though the FBI has no idea what happened. I feel like they're being very sloppy to leave the attacker's home wide open for a reporter to just walk in and give a tour. I don't know. Of course, people are online saying that they believe it's being done purposely. I'm not, you know, willing to say that, but I can understand how anybody could arrive to that. To have the DOJ and the documents right on the kitchen counter that showed, if you see the video, again, Jenny Tarr, J-E-N-N-I-E, last name T-A-E-R. You can go to her social media accounts. She has the tour right there on the video right there. It's about 2 minutes long. On the documentation, or the documents, I should say, on the kitchen counter, you could actually see the notes because the camera got that close. So there's sulfuric acid. There's a whole list on there of what the DOJ ended up bagging up and actually taking out of the house. Also on those documents, you could see what they were looking for specifically. The search warrant, everything's sitting right there on the kitchen counter. Again, if you are worried about a copycat, why are you setting all of this out on the counter? Even where he was making those bombs, everything's still sitting there. It's still sitting there. The light that he used, everything, it's the light was still on. I've got lots of questions on this, and I'm afraid it's going to be more like, remember the Las Vegas massacre? Remember that? At the country concert for Jason Aldean? I'm afraid that we're not going to get any questions answered, and I'm afraid that we're not going to get a motive, even though I think the motive is clearly, you know, radicalized by ISIS, but I would love to know why he chose Bourbon Street. I would love to know why he chose to drive from Texas to Louisiana when Texas is pretty populated. I would love to know more. I would love to know, because it seems to me that they don't really know anything about this guy, yet they're telling us it's not connected in any way with the guy that blew up the cyber Tesla truck in Las Vegas. But you don't know anything about anything. But you do know that. Okay. Gotcha. I've got Brian in Brooklyn. Brian, you wanted to weigh in?
Yeah, Kim. I mean, it's sloppy. I watched the video. She walked right through the house. Everything's sitting out, his clothes hanging up. It's sloppy police work because they should have had an officer sitting at that house until they cleared the house 100%.
Yeah.
And plus, he had the Airbnb house caught fire that he rented.
Yeah, I did see that.
They're not talking about that, what they found in that house, and why didn't they find out who rented it? That way they could have had him in custody prior.
Right. I mean, there's got to be somebody that owns the Airbnb. Where is that owner? Are they talking to the federal investigators?
If you caught my house on fire, I'm going to be there and tell the police, look, I rented it to such and such, and if there's bomb-making material in there, because there was stuff in there, that's how he caught fire and he left.
Yeah. Yeah, Brian, this is wild.
None of that. It's sloppy work all the way around for an investigation.
It is.
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess my question real quick, Brian, do you think it's purposely sloppy or do you think this is just we don't have competent people at the FBI?
I think they're waiting for others to come out that was, if anybody was involved with him, to see if they go there or...
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. It's just it's hard to put together. I mean, they changed the one FBI investigator from the woman to the guy, and they showed him with the core and the top coat, the glasses, setting the explosives around town. So
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's wondering. You're like, how did she miss that? How did she arrive at this, you know, that he had other accomplices and it was the two guys and the female that were setting him out when they had the video of him with the cooler? None of this makes sense to me.
That's what I mean. How can it be a guy and a girl and then they cleared them because it wasn't them. They found out where they were and it wasn't them. Then they went back and dug all the audio up, the cameras they must have, and saw that he was the one.
Yeah.
But where were they at about the fire? The fire would have stopped him doing the attack.
Yeah, yeah, no, none of this makes sense. Brian, thank you so much for weighing in. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you. None of this makes sense, guys. That's why I'm trying to get your feedback on it, because maybe I'm just missing all of this, right? I'm just not that bright. 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. All right, happy Friday, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget, at 11 o'clock, we got an in-studio guest. There's a vacancy in District 31, and I think Republicans can flip this seat, so stay right there. We're talking about the updates here in New Orleans. There was a reporter from the New York Post. They gave a tour of the attacker's house yesterday, and we're trying to figure out if the FBI really has a handle on all of this. Tim in Crownsville. Tim, you wanted to weigh in?
Yeah, Kim, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. I want to comment on what you just said about what do you do if he hadn't committed a crime yet. Here in the state of Maryland, the red flag law, they have no problem with coming in your house and taking away your guns if somebody just makes a complaint about you saying you're a threat. It happened to that man in Glen Burnie where his family member from out of state called, and they showed up at his house at 5 o'clock in the morning and ended up shooting a man to death in his own house. So when you say, what can they do? Well, I mean, Maryland goes right in your house, no problem, if you just make an accusation. So why couldn't they have done that with this guy?
Well, I don't know if Texas has the same.
He was radicalized.
Yeah, Tim, I don't know if Texas has the same laws. I'm not sure.
I mean, when you say what can you do? I mean, it's the whole point. I mean, you know, it makes no sense.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I called into Bruce yesterday morning and said this. You know, why is it that the FBI has wasted so much time going after Christians and patriotic Americans in the last 4 years, and they've dropped the ball going after real criminals?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tim.
Outrageous. I mean, look, I'm another generation Marylander. My family's been here since 1729, so I'm so passionate about our country, it's unreal.
Yeah.
You know, the Democrats are destroying our country. I don't care what state you look at, where it's run. Run by Democrats is running through the ground.
No, I agree with you 100%.
We need more Republicans. We need more strong Republicans like you. You are great. You really are. And it's just, if you ran in a different state, I believe you could win. These liberals in this state, this is why you just can't win. I mean, nope.
Yeah.
It's sick. It really is.
Yeah, Tim. I agree with you.
Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Have a great weekend, Tim. Happy New Year to you. I think a lot of people feel like Tim on this, and I'm not sure exactly what you can do in Texas. Obviously, it's more of a red state, but you would think that you could at least call in, because they have those tip lines, even in the FBI, if you feel as though somebody has been radicalized by a terrorist organization. I mean, I guess we'll have to wait and see and learn whether or not the ex-wife's husband or somebody in the family decided to call one of those tip lines. If that was the case, then again, I would be looking at the FBI. All right, we'll continue this conversation when we get back. Also, we want to talk about the speaker's race, because that is going to be the question of the day. Can Mike Johnson pull it off today? We're going to have to wait and see. Some people say yes, some people say no. I don't know if it's going to happen in round one, but we'll talk about it.
Kim Plasek Live starts now on Talk Radio 680, WCBS, and 99.9 FM in Harford County.
All right, good morning. Happy Friday. Happy New Year. All those great things. You know, we're talking about the updates coming out of New Orleans. We learned so much, but we also learned that if you wanted to walk into the attacker's home, you know, the guy radicalized by ISIS that mowed down 14 people with his rented truck, you can do that. It's wide open in Houston, Texas. A reporter with the New York Post, she did just that. She was even on Fox News at 10 p.m. last night with Trace Gallagher. I guess he called her and said, how the heck are you inside giving us this tour? I'm blown away, but that's the question right now. Do you even trust this investigation? 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. I'm going to read a couple of texts I have on this, take these calls. Then we're also going to talk about what's been going on with the investigation with the cyber truck explosion in Las Vegas. That's also extremely confusing. And I don't know if it's because, you know, it's like a shift change, right? You're going from Biden's FBI to Trump's FBI. Maybe they just don't care. You know, it's wild that they're being so sloppy like this. But I want to get your take on it. I've got Jeffrey in Morrell Park. Jeffrey, what say you on this?
I read same news article yesterday about the gentleman that ran his truck and killed a bunch of people and hurt more, that the local FBI was hiring based on DEI and the local police department. Now, do they think they're going to get the best people through merit and qualifications hiring through DEI? I mean, because that's how it's said.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think you get the best. If it's the best people, why doesn't the local football team hire based on DEI?
Yeah.
Since you're getting the best people, that's what they say.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good point there. And there were a lot of people talking about that. And I guess that's why they made some changes in who's handling the investigation. But you're right. I mean, from the very beginning of this, you know, not only were we getting bad information from, you know, just the fact that we didn't have all the facts in the very beginning, but the information we were receiving and that they were noting just didn't make sense at all. Now that we've learned more.
What about Secret Service? Are they hiring DEI also? Are we getting the best coverage for our future president?
You know, it kind of looks like it. It kind of looks like it.
And I heard our entire military is DEI too. So what's going to happen if we get in the war?
Yeah, I don't even want to think about that there, Jeffrey.
Yeah. It scares me. I'm really scared.
Yeah. Well, Jeffrey, thank you so much. And great points there. I hope you have a great weekend.
Jim, I listen to you every day. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, look, Jeffrey has some great points there. This is why I'm afraid, you know, when it comes to the inauguration, that we're not going to have the best and the brightest. Because if this is what we're getting out of New Orleans, and again, I mean, Jeffrey Landry, the governor down there, this is a Republican governor. I mean, does he know that they're hiring in New Orleans based on DEI? Well, it could be a situation like Baltimore City, right? When Governor Larry Hogan was in charge, he couldn't tell Mayor Brandon Scott not to hire based on such and such. He couldn't tell them not to defund the police. But as soon as Baltimore got a little more, I don't know, violent, who did they blame? They blame Governor Larry Hogan. It's like, you know, how is it his fault that Baltimore City is like it is? It's not his fault. He tried to help. They told him not to. But that's what they were saying, even when he was running for that Senate seat. We all know that I'm not a huge Larry Hogan fan. But when they started saying that, I said, are you kidding me? He tried to help. You pushed him away, saying, oh, he's a Republican. He's a white guy, right? Then all of a sudden it's, look what Larry Hogan let happen to Baltimore City. It's like, wait, what? And he didn't really push back on that. So I didn't feel that bad for him. Because, like, why did he just show, you know, proof of him trying to do more in Baltimore? I didn't understand that part. I really didn't. I guess because he wanted to still have Democrat friends. I don't know. I got Michael in Dundalk. Michael, how do you feel about the FBI's investigation in New Orleans?
Hi, Kim. Good morning.
Good morning.
Love your show. You mean the DEI FBI? That's, I'm looking through X last night, and I see the girl reporter walk right into an open crime scene. Papers everywhere. His Quran was open. That should have been a sealed crime scene. I mean, what is the FBI doing?
Yeah.
I mean, is it Keystone Cops? They can't connect the dots. And the mainstream media must think we're all that stupid that we can't look at this and go, is this all circumstantial that these guys served at Fort Bragg together, that, you know, things are going on? I mean, who's the FBI spying on more, the American people or the terrorists that are coming into this country?
Yeah.
I'm just worried that, you know, as Americans, we just better stand strong and praise God and pass the ammunition. That's what I got to say, baby.
Yeah, Michael, thank you so much. I hope you have a great weekend and a happy new year.
You as well.
Thank you.
Good work.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, FBI, DEI. It's making sense. It really is. And it's hard to watch. Right? Marty had a great text in the text line. He was saying that he believed the IEDs were placed where they were on Bourbon Street to detonate and go off as first responders were responding to all of that. Marty, I think you're correct in that assessment. Robert's saying here, hi, Kim. I think they are quick to describe this attacker as a lone wolf terrorist because the others involved are probably agents and paid informants. They'll say, no, there's nobody else on Bourbon Street with IEDs. They actually had IUDs. Also, it seems that we're quick to label Luigi Mangione a terrorist and charge him as such than they were to a guy wearing a battle fatigues who rammed his truck with an ISIS flag affixed into a crowd of people and then has a shootout to death with law enforcement. You're right, Robert, and hit two police officers. Yeah, this is interesting, huh? How we label things so quickly in some situations and not the others. I will say they are different states. I will say that. But you expect Louisiana to be a bit more conservative, right? I mean, you expect... I know New Orleans is just kind of, it's a lot like Baltimore City where you got the progressives running things. The mayor in New Orleans is obviously a lot more articulate than the mayor we have here. I don't think she needs media training, but she's progressive policy-wise. And so they do have some of that down there as well. But I did think it was interesting, as I noted, the very first press conference, or I should say the second one, where you had Senator Kennedy show up just to take over. I assume here that he probably watched the first press conference, saw that the special agent did not want to classify it as a terrorist attack, and he got his car and got over there as quickly as possible. Same thing with Governor Jeff Landry. There's no way they watched that and thought, we'll leave it to the investigators. They probably were like, yeah, we got to get over there. We got to get over there now. It's a shame what's happening there in New Orleans. Real quick, I wanted to also just talk quickly about the Cybertruck explosion and where that currently stands. Just so you know, if you haven't heard, it's just as confusing, if not more, about what's going on in regards to New Orleans. I say this, this explosion, this attacker that was radicalized by ISIS, I'm looking at both of these situations, both of these tragedies, and I'm thinking to myself, this is going to end just like what we saw at the country concert in Las Vegas, where 54 people were shot. Do you remember that? I remember it. We were told there was no motive. Those at the MGM Hotel, they were told they had a gag order on them. They couldn't speak to the press. They couldn't speak to the public in general. We learned absolutely nothing about anything. We were told it was the lone gunman. He had all these guns in one room. It was just he. He was able to remove part of the window. He was the one taking all the guns back and forth. The whole thing was wild. Never got any kind of answers. Then we found out that he had done some work at Area 51. He had done some work with Lockheed Martin at some point. I'm like, wait a minute, what? What kind of connections are these? You're telling me you don't have more information on this guy? He was at Lockheed Martin? Come on. Look, I understand there might be some things that we don't know for our own good. I get that. There's probably a lot going on that we have no idea about. I understand. But there are some things that are just blatantly in front of our faces where we're kind of like, look, this is an insult, and we should know more. 14 young people were mowed down on New Year's Day, I guess, right? 3:15 a.m. They're not going home. All of them promising futures. And you're telling me that I can just walk right into this terrorist attacker's home if I choose to? That's the respect that you're giving to these victims' families? That right there, that's what we're giving them? It's just unacceptable. It truly is. All right, real quick, I want you to hear what's going on with the Cybertruck explosion. Elon Musk is assisting with this investigation because, God forbid the FBI just do their job. Take a listen, if you will, with the Cybertruck explosion audio.
Then that vehicle sort of vented out and up, but it didn't even damage the glass doors at the Trump. So I'm not sure what that means. I also know that there's a number of unexploded pieces of the things that he had inside of that vehicle. And so I just don't think that it was done as well as he was expecting it to be done. But go ahead.
Sofia Rodriguez with Univision Vegas. I was wondering, were you able to recover the video from the Cybertruck, or was that destructive?
So the question is, are we able to recover the video from the Cybertruck? And many of you may know that those Cybertrucks contain a tremendous number of cameras. Mr. Musk has sent out a number of his folks that will be arriving here this afternoon with the intent to try to capture the part of that captured all of the video from inside of the truck. Sir?
Just quickly, you had mentioned a number of the components in the back of the truck that did not go off. Maybe this is a better suited question for ATF, but when it comes to the rudimentary nature of the bomb, I think we mostly think of a bomb that is connected. This seems like individual kind of incendiary and combustible components put together. Can you speak to how you think this is a bomb, or was it just several pieces of things that might blow up and might explode that were just lit and gone off at the same time?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it does appear that it was... I just want to be careful with my language here, but the level of sophistication is not what we would expect from an individual with this type of military experience. That most of that the materials inside that Tesla were fuel to help fuel a greater explosion. But it's too early to answer any question is if there was sophisticated connectivity to those components to make it ignite in the way that it did.
All right. And so that you heard there from those in charge of the investigation in Las Vegas. Elon Musk is sending a team down to help with capture some of the evidence from those cameras that were in the Cybertruck. That's concerning to me. Don't know about you. That's concerning. You're telling me you've got federal investigators on this, you've got the local police on this, and nobody within those departments have any idea how to get some of the film off of these cameras? Holy hell. Who are we hiring? Who are we hiring? Can you hire some of these people from Tesla? I'm just asking questions. We don't have the best of the brightest. This is obvious. Thank you, Elon Musk, for sending your guys over. We do not have the best of the brightest. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Well, I'm going to get your feedback on this in just a second here. If you want to call in, you can. 410-WCBM-680. 410-922-6680. If you want to comment on the Cybertruck explosion or the New Orleans terrorist attack, you can. All right, we're talking about the terrorist attack in New Orleans. We got all the updates. Same with the Cybertruck explosion. We got all the updates there. I wanted to hear from you and what your thoughts are on both of these. I've got Jack in Perryville. Jack, you wanted to weigh in?
Hi there. Yes.
Go ahead, Jack. Yep.
I spent 11 years in the Army, and I was artillery first, had a lot of experience around explosives, then I became a chemical officer, and I have no doubt in my mind, I don't want to give people alarm or any reason to worry, anything like that, but if he wanted to get real explosives, he would have had the opportunity and he would have been able to do that. I spent time with not only artillery rounds, I've used T4, grenades, things of that nature, and I don't think that there were anything. People call what happened in the Tesla truck an explosion, and I think the truck held up remarkably well, given the circumstances, but given his background, there's a lot of things that don't make sense, and everybody's jumping to the conclusion that because they both went to Fort Bragg, just to give people a little bit of insight. If you're artillery, you go to Fort Sill. Artillery is a pulled cannon, a towed cannon. A tank is armor. That's down at Fort Hood. So the majority of the rest of the foot troops, infantry, things of that nature, they're going to go to Fort Bragg. So it's an absolutely humongous base. So the fact that they both went there, is I don't think there's any tie-in regarding that whatsoever. But, given his background and what he could have obtained, I think fairly easily could have been much, much worse.
Yeah, Jack, well, first of all, thank you so much for your service. And that's what a lot of people were saying, as he was a Green Beret and had all this background. And of course, you don't know for sure, but do you believe that the intent there was to harm others or possibly, because we know that he shot himself before, releasing, I guess, whatever it was, the fireworks or what have you in that vehicle. Do you believe that he intended to hurt others? Because I agree with you that he could have done much more damage.
I really don't think he intended to hurt others. Not only were all the materials that he had pretty rudimentary, it didn't seem like much of even an attempt from what I've read for him to even put anything together with what he had. It's a shame somebody who was trained like that, put that much time in, dedicated, came to this sad end.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Jack, thank you so much for weighing in. I appreciate your knowledge on this.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, we're talking about the Cybertruck explosion in Las Vegas. We did find out Elon Musk, Tesla, is going to Las Vegas to help to get some of the footage off the cameras that were in that truck. So we should know more next week. I've got Greg in Dundalk. Greg, you wanted to weigh in?
Hi, good morning, Kim. How you doing?
Morning.
I just wanted to follow up a little bit on what the last caller said. I follow a lifelong career Green Beret on YouTube named Valhalla. And sorry, I'm outside. There's a plane going over top of me. And he brought up the fact that their standard training in the Green Berets, they learn how to make these IEDs, and they learn how to do the, what they call them, V-bids, when they're a vehicle-type IED. And he said the blast configuration, the way it was set up, was to go straight up in the air and not even towards the hotel or the doors or the windows. So he was like, I think it's very unlikely that a career-trained Green Beret, you know, would configure this to do basically nothing, where it didn't even damage the windows, the doors, or any people inside the hotel.
Yeah, yeah, and it makes me think that, you know, it sounds like to me, that, like they said before, that he did shoot himself before the blast. It sounds like to me that if all said and done, it sounds like he just wanted to hurt himself, not others.
Well, why leave your house? Why not do it at home? You know,
right.
That's crazy.
Right. Why drive to Nevada from Colorado?
Right.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Greg. I appreciate you. Hope you have a great weekend.
You do the same. Thanks.
Thank you. I also have time here. Johnny in Hamilton, I got about 2 minutes. Do you want to weigh in?
Yeah. First off, the last guy was right. These guys can make IUDs a lot more powerful. He was having marital problems. Okay? His wife didn't like Trump. He liked Trump. It's a symbolic suicide. That's all it is.
Yeah, Johnny, a lot of people are saying the same thing, so that's how you feel, huh?
Yeah, and also about the connection of Brad. My God, Kim, I was there. There's over 30,000 personnel. Him and that other guy were years apart. That has as much connection as somebody kills a bunch of people in New York, and I live in New York.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I agree with you on that one, because I know a couple guys that went to Fort Bragg, even some that are in our members of Congress right now. So trust me, I feel the same way. But, Johnny, thank you so much for weighing in. I hope you have a great weekend.
Okay.
Thank you. You know, a lot of people are saying the same thing as Johnny and many others, is that they believe this was symbolic, possibly could be. And it just so happens it happened right there after the New Orleans attack. And perhaps even in that drive from Colorado to Nevada, perhaps the Cybertruck suicide, I don't know what you even call Matthew Liverpool, I guess is his name, right? But even beyond that, I guess you could say that possibly he didn't even hear about the New Orleans attack. That is a possibility. All right, we come back. We'll discuss more of this. And then also we'll be joined in studio at 11 a.m. by LaToya Cagolo. There's a seat vacancy that Republicans could snatch in Maryland. All right, good morning. Happy Friday. We are wrapping up the conversation here on the updates coming out of New Orleans and then also Las Vegas with the Cybertruck explosion. And I'm going to read a couple of these text messages that came in. I appreciate you guys texting in. In case you didn't know, if you download the WCVM app, which is free in the App Store, you can text right there live through studio and I'll get it here and I can read it. David in Reisterstown. David, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, hi, Kim. Good morning. Happy
New Year. Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you. With regards to this terrorist act, my gut feeling is that they may be very linked for several reasons. One, I think they went to the same army base, both of them. Two, the vehicles they used were both rented from the same app. And this incident happened on the same day. And as we speak, the FBI, they've not accessed their phone records. So my question is, how is the FBI quickly coming to the conclusion that these were not linked when you've not even accessed their phone records? Good thing Elon Musk, he said he's teamed down to analyze the camera in the Cybertruck. Hopefully something comes out. But my concern is, why the rush to tell the public that these incidents are not linked? When you've not accessed phone records, they went to the same school, army base, same app, events happened the same day. It's too much of a coincidence, in my opinion. It's just my gut feeling. I may be wrong, but I just feel something looks fishy right there. And also, one thing that really pisses me off most of the time is the fact that most of these evildoers, when things like this happen, the FBI speak to say, oh, we know this person, he's been on our radar for so long. How come these folks are on your radar all the time and they still go out and commit this evil act?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question, too. I can't understand why, there's, you know, like you said, there's been so many of these killers that have made posts on social media, and they have no idea, apparently, that they're going to make an attack soon. And like you said, they're on the radar, and they still don't move in.
Exactly.
It is bizarre.
Exactly my point, yeah. I hope they get better at this. Keep politics aside. They need to keep the public safe and be honest with the American people.
Yeah.
That's my take.
Yeah,
and I think the army, the U.S. Army, as a matter of fact, needs to start looking inward and start, you know, I mean, these are U.S. soldiers who
right.
did this. That's shocking. I mean, something must have eaten deep into the fabric of our culture that the security agency needs to start looking in deep instead of focusing on arresting parents at school board meetings and all that. Focus in-house.
Yeah,
because there's a saying that a house divided against itself cannot stand. We need to start looking inward because our culture is gradually getting diluted by the influx of migrants and so many things coming in. But then we need to increase our safety protocols in keeping our society and public safe.
Yeah.
So this is failure all around, for what I can tell.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, David. Thank you so much for calling in. I hope you have a happy new year.
Thank you, Kim, for having me. Thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's a lot of people that feel as David does, and that is that they believe that these are connected. I will say, when it comes to Fort Bragg and a lot of these really large bases, it is hard to lay that connection together, but I can see how people are putting that together. Now, as far as the phone records, to go beyond that, I mean, how many times did we hear about some of these apps, right? Like whether WhatsApp, Telegram, Signal, yeah. Like, you've got all these apps that people use nowadays, too. You know, they don't actually use the phone. I mean, have they gone through those apps to see if people are connected? I don't know. You know, watching this investigation on the outside, I feel like I'm watching an episode of Blue's Clues, you know? Like, it seems like I've got a bunch of elementary kids, school students, and they're all coming together saying, I think they could have been this, or, you know, watching a game of Clue. It's, you know. It's the terrorist in the library. Like it's bizarre to watch. And as we noted earlier, the home of the New Orleans attacker is wide open for anybody to walk inside of. I'm gonna leave it there. Gonna put in it because we got so much to talk about today. But hopefully we'll know more next week. I'm gonna just say up front, I don't have confidence in either one of these investigations. When we get the video from the Cybertruck, I'm hoping that tells us a little bit more, but who knows? Who knows if they can even, get the video from it? Again, this guy was a Green Beret. His background, I mean, when it comes to IT, when it comes to what he was able and capable of doing, who knows if he did not dismantle those videos or those cameras in the Cybertruck? We don't know. We have no idea. We'll find out, I guess, once Tesla arrives to Vegas. All right. Furthermore, I said in the beginning of the show, I was really upset about what I'm hearing coming out of Harford County in regards to Rachel Warren's case. Remember, she was the beautiful mother of five killed on the Mon Pah Trail out for a jog like many of us take often. And right now, her killer, who was an illegal immigrant, should not be here, shouldn't have been here in the first place. He's now got some requests. Take a listen.
Welcome back. We have an update for you tonight about the man accused of killing Rachel Morin. According to our media partner, the Baltimore Banner, Victor Martinez Hernandez now wants his trial moved out of Harford County.
His attorney alleges he can't receive a fair trial in the county because they say an impartial jury can't be seated. He faces several charges, including first and second degree murder and the killing of 37-year-old Rachel Morin back in 2023.
A motion hearing scheduled for January 31st. That's in Harford County Circuit Court.
Why are you even here? I mean, this is, it's so frustrating what's happening in this country. President Trump, Tom Holman, Republicans in general, we got the majority. Hallelujah. We can't take over soon enough. I feel like I'm surrounded by a bunch of idiots. What do you mean he doesn't believe he can receive a fair trial? You know, fair or not fair, sir, you shouldn't even be here. You don't even go here. Are you kidding? Are you kidding me? You killed a mother of five on a jog. And you're worried about receiving a fair trial in Harford County? Sir, if I had my way, if I was in charge of this case, you would already been put to death. You wouldn't even be here. I wouldn't care to give you a fair trial. You are not a U.S. citizen. You are not supposed to be here. You crossed our borders multiple times illegally. And you're talking about a fair trial here in America? Get out of here. This is what many people talk about. And you might not agree with me on that, because I could sound a little extreme, but just so you know, when it comes to illegal migration, I've got zero tolerance. None whatsoever. I want to end birthright citizenship. I don't care. I don't care. We got our own problems. You want to cross our borders illegally and kill this beautiful mother of five? There are five children that didn't have their mother on Christmas morning this year. And you're talking about a fair trial? You better be glad you're still alive, sir. This, again, another situation in this country that should not be allowed. Do you know how many other countries would not allow this? This is a circus at this point. A circus. The fact that we're having the conversation, the fact that this request was made, the fact that his lawyer, I don't know how he has a legal team, the fact that his lawyer put this request in, I'm insulted. I'm offended. And I didn't personally know Rachel. Even running for office, I did not reach out to Rachel's family because I didn't want to make it so political, because I'm hoping that they receive justice. I didn't want to be there as like a tag along. I didn't want to show up to the Trump press conferences. And I think the mother did the right thing in making sure people knew about her daughter and her case. But it wasn't about me. I'm really upset on how all this is unfolding. We'll watch and we'll see. And I'll try to calm down. But the fact that you believe that you even deserve a fair trial is a joke. The fact that any judge or anybody would entertain this request is a joke. Our legal system, our justice system is a joke. I think many of us know that already. Some of us longer than others. We'll see what the judge has to say about this, but to Rachel's family, I'm sorry that you're even going through any of this. And like I said, I cannot wait for President Trump and others to come and take over. And just so you know, in case you missed it, Baltimore County did receive a letter from America First Legal, just like in Howard County, Calvin Ball received that letter as well. Unfortunately, you know, the letter was addressed to Johnny Olszewski. I know he's on his way out. He's getting sworn in today. Yes, today, because they're going to vote on the speaker. But Baltimore County, every jurisdiction in Maryland, I hope that your guard is up. And I hope that you understand that Tom Holman and ICE, they're coming to town. They're checking their list. They're making sure this comes to an end. And if you've noticed the language that President Trump has been using lately, and I love it, because he says we're going to start with the criminals that are here illegally. He's going to start with the criminals. And then they're going to move further to those that are just here illegally and those that are probably harboring a lot of these criminals in your neighborhood, in your community, allowing some of these criminals to go to your public schools with your children. I can't wait to get rid of these people. I can't wait. It's almost like a cockroach infestation at this point. It's like, they, you know, people come in, they're coming in illegally, they don't care. They're multiplying. Do I sound harsh today, Brian? It's Friday. I don't care. I don't care. Get out of here. I've got homeless veterans. I got people that grew up in West Baltimore that still do not have a grocery store in their neighborhood where they can get fresh food. A lot of that is the crime and violence. But you know what? Can we start to talk about and really make some traction on our own issues? I don't want to continue to pay for somebody here illegally and have all their family members move here also. I don't want to do it anymore. I'm done with it. I pay enough in taxes. I was at the grocery store last night. Everybody else was too because, you know, the snow was coming. But I was at the grocery store last night trying to figure out how much I'm going to budget for the week. There are people here illegally that are not, they're not having those same questions within their minds. They're not having that same conversation with their kid saying, you know what, we don't really need this. We can't really afford it this week, Olivia. And you also don't need Sprite, to be honest with you. I don't know why you keep drinking soda anyway. You're not even allowed. What are you doing? Get this out of the cart. But beyond that, they're not having those conversations because they're here illegally. They're getting housing, room and board. They're getting groceries. They're getting all these things on the taxpayer dime. Meanwhile, the taxpayer, like you, like myself, we're trying to figure out how much we can afford for the week. It's a shame, isn't it? The Democrats are fine with it. They're fine with it. They're doing it in their own household. Why? I think because they're stupid. I can't, otherwise, I can't explain. Beyond that, I did want to just mention, in case you missed it, there are face masks going into place in different states across the country. I did note, if you ever watched my teasers on social media for the show for the day, I did note, you're going to have to arrest me if you want me to wear a face mask. I mean handcuffs. I mean, you're going to have to pull me out. You know what? Just throw me on the ground and beat me up because I might actually fight back. I'm not wearing a mask. If you think that there's going to be a mask mandate here in Maryland and I'm going to follow it, you're wrong. You're dead wrong. I'm not doing it. But if you plan to travel, just so you know, there are jurisdictions in California, Illinois, Indiana, and New Jersey that are already putting the mask mandate in place. And you're probably wondering, Kim, is this because of this bird flu we keep hearing about? No, they're saying it because of COVID. Yes, we've gone back to COVID days. So if you plan to travel to any of those states, you might want to check out which jurisdiction you are traveling to, because some of those areas, you're not going to be able to go to the grocery store without a mask on your face. And again, Democrats. It's almost like, it's not even like they just want to torture their constituents. They're fine with torturing themselves. I wonder what some of these people are into. You know what I mean? It sounds a little S&M. It sounds like you like it. I don't get it. Do you like it? Some of us aren't into this. I don't have this kind of fetish where I'm like, you know what? Who cares if I can't afford it? Let's give it away. I'm not into that, okay? Perhaps you're into the mask and the bondage. I'm not into that. Why do I have to play the same game? I don't want to play. Also, five juveniles were arrested for assaulting a police officer in Anne Arundel County. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that after we speak to our guest. In studio, we have Latoya Kongola. She is joining us. There is a vacancy here in the state of Maryland in District 31. Where a Republican could, in fact, win. Now, Latoya has an amazing resume. She's not like me. She's actually got a really good resume, I swear to God. She's got an amazing resume. She's got a good head on her shoulders. She's conservative. And she's somebody that we absolutely need in this district. And I'm telling you right now, I'm endorsing her for myself and for anybody else in District 31, 100%. You got to listen to her because, to be honest with you, we need more individuals with common sense that put Americans first. And she's not like, you know, there's going to be people who say, oh, she's a Trumper. She's not a Trumper. She looks at his policies and says, yeah, this is what we need. If you want to call me a Trumper, you can do that all day. I don't mind. I am a Trumper. Ha ha ha. But at the end of the day, not everybody that supports Trump's policies are Trumpers. We just want common sense. We want the rule of law to be followed. And we want to make sure that we're doing something when it comes to be fiscally responsible, when it comes to some of these legislative issues, when it comes to pulling back on whether it's the blueprint, the red line, all of these things that we cannot afford, right? The climate change initiatives. I'm done with these conversations. And we need to elect people that can look these other individuals in the eye and say, this is not what your constituents want. This is not what we're going to do. So there's a vacancy in District 31. Are we going to do what we have to do to get a Republican in that seat? I'm going to try. I'm going to try my darndest. And I know many of you feel the same way that I do. I know many of you will fight for this. And that's why I'm happy to have LaToya joining us in studio. We get back at 11 o'clock after the next, not this break, 11 o'clock break. So she'll be here in studio. We're also going to talk about the speaker's race. Obviously, that's a big question of the day. We'll do all of that coming up next. All right, coming up after the break, we're going to be speaking to our in-house guest, LaToya Cagola. Remember, there is an open seat in District 31 here in the state of Maryland. Real quick, I got Preston in Severna Park. Preston, did you want to weigh in before LaToya gets in?
Absolutely. I just want to say, you made the right choice endorsing LaToya. LaToya is the most generous, sweetest person, and she is not going out there to cut ribbons and baby kiss. She's going out there to do her job. She knows who pays her. We, the people.
Yeah.
That's the problem with the people that are in there now. They're just there for a paycheck, and they don't know what's going on in the community.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, she's my girl, and I hope she gets this, and I will do everything in my power to help her get it.
Well, Preston, same here. Thank you so much. I hope you have a great weekend. And LaToya will be coming up next year. Preston, thank you so much. She is really great, but I'm not going to tell you more about it. She can tell you herself. She's very capable, very competent. It's something that we don't currently have in many seats in this state. Real quick, I know a lot of you are weighing in online about, Rachel Martin and her a killer that is now looking for a fair trial. Patricia says, Kim, do you know that what ruined this country? Lawyers, banks, and politicians, the left has the almighty profit. The right has the almighty profit. Yes, can't wait to get rid of U.S. from the evil Satan slaves in the Democrat Party, the hippies that are now the man, but our spoiled children. Their playbook is dedicated to Lucifer. First President Woodrow Wilson grew government, taking more of our liberties. Yeah, Patricia, and that pretty much sums up a lot of what's going on. Keith says, Kim, if you can guess, who gets to pay for the lawyer fighting for the change of venue? Yeah, Keith, it's us. It's us. And I got a text here on my phone. So, my friend Jeff, he's like, oh, great. Now we get to pay to house the person and their legal fees. Yeah, that's what we get to do. Jonathan in text line says, Kim, we need to go after people employing these illegals also. I agree, Jonathan. Absolutely. Enough is enough. All right. Coming up next, we'll be joined in studio by LaToya Cagola. There's a seat vacant in the state of Maryland that we Republicans need to fight for. Also, the question of the day. I want you to go ahead to WCBM.com, brought to you by Renovation Real Estate. And the question today is, do you think Mike Johnson will be elected speaker on the very first round? Go and vote at 11:30. We're going to go into that conversation after we speak to LaToya. So, again, the question is, do you think Mike Johnson will be elected speaker during the first round? Now, I already voted. It looks to me that some of you already voted as well. I love the fact that you're keeping up with the poll questions. WCBM.com. This is a poll question brought to you by Renovation Real Estate. Coming up next, LaToya Cagola. And I tell you what, you're not going to want to go anywhere. And if you can, you know what? Go ahead and text some friends. Give somebody a call. You got about 7 or 8 minutes here before she sits down and takes the mic. You're going to want to hear from her, okay? Because in my view, we talked about this the other day with Dr. Jeff Wolford. In my view, we do have Republicans in this state that can beat Democrats and that can win hands down. And they support what we support 100%. We just got to make sure we get them there. And with the seat being vacant, I think we can do this. We can accomplish this. Again, it's District 31, LaToya Cagola coming up next. Go to the website, WCBM.com. The poll question brought to you by Renovation Real Estate. Do you think Mike Johnson will be elected speaker in the very first round? Let me know your thoughts.
Replacing Lives starts now on Talk Radio 680, WCBM, and 99.9 FM in Harford County.
All right, good morning. Happy Friday. Hopefully your new year is getting started off right. I got a real treat for you of this hour. And I got to ask you, if you're just joining us, where the heck have you been? We've been talking about the updates out of New Orleans, out of Las Vegas. The fact that the illegal immigrant that killed Rachel Warren in Harford County believes he has a right to a fair trial. Again, I know it's what we do for American citizens, but if you're not an American citizen, I don't feel the same way. I just don't. We also have some juvenile crime that happened in Anne Arundel County. We'll talk about that in a second with our guest. Right now in studio, we have LaToya Cagola. LaToya, I'm going to let her tell you a little bit about herself and why she's now running for this vacant seat in District 31. But first, good morning, LaToya. How
good
are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Kim. I am so excited to be here today with you. I have been on cloud nine all day, and I'm telling you, the District 31 is fired up.
Well,
we are ready for change.
Good. Now, just so people know, I've known you for years now.
Yes, ma'am.
You were there when I was running in 2020. You
That's
were like,
correct.
Kim, you can do this.
That's
I promise
right.
you. You were helping us out. Just so people know exactly where your heart is and how much you take this seriously as much as I do here in the state of Maryland. But if you could, tell us a little bit about yourself and then why you're running for this vacant seat.
Okay. Well, most people know me in Anne Arundel County. I'm a mental health therapist, so I deal with a lot of families and have treated thousands of families in Anne Arundel County for 18 years. They know that my heart and soul is in Anne Arundel County. I live there. I own a business there. I'm raising my children there. And I give everything to our community because I care that much. But I ran for this seat 2 years ago. So I'm not, you know, this isn't something that's brand new to me. I ran for the seat. Unfortunately, I lost to the incumbents. But I think that this was God's timing, that he allowed this seat to open up at the time that he did. And I'm back at it. My website is up. In the last 8 days, I've gotten 47 letters of support from community members, text messages, calls, Facebook messages, and we're ready. We're ready. Tonight's the night. Our public hearing is at 7 o'clock at Early Heights, and we are ready to show up for District 31.
Yes. So, again, if you are in Anne Arundel County, even if you're not in Anne Arundel County, and you want to support some real change and real leadership in District 31, and there's three seats total in District 31, right?
Correct.
How did they do that? Was it like an ABC situation?
So it was a redistricting. So we were a two-seat district up until the last redistricting.
Okay.
So then that became a third seat.
Okay.
So there are three Republicans in those seats currently. Well, now two, but so those are three Republican seats, and we want to keep it that way. But we also want more Republicans across the state to win. So I'm not just doing this for myself. I want to help other Republicans that I know are formidable candidates that are, you know, not running because they have an advantage, because they're well connected. We need people who are well connected to the community to step up and serve the people.
Yeah. I'm done with the vanity seats.
Absolutely.
I'm done with it. Like, you know, there's some people that want to run because they want to say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm the delegate here. Or I'm this and that, or I've got this. And No. We need people that really are going
to
work, because
Amen
those that we have in Annapolis, whether it's Senator Justin Reedy, Delegate Nino Mangione, I talk about this all the time. Mm-hmm. We got some real Republicans up there that get the work done, Shalega, Naraki. They need that support.
Absolutely.
They need more people up there to support what they're doing. So speaking of which, session starts how many days now?
January 8th.
Yeah.
Next Wednesday.
It starts soon. A lot of people are talking about the budget and the fact that we're headed towards this deficit.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on it?
Oh, well, first of all, I have a business degree, a master's degree in management and leadership, so I am formally trained in budgeting. So I want to address the fraud, waste, and abuse. I want us to look now at where we're not getting a bang for our dollar and how we can shift money to where it's going to be effective and going to work for the citizens. So when you have people running for these seats that don't have that background, that education, they don't know how to challenge the budget. They don't know how to balance a budget. So I want to bring that experience there. But if we're looking at a $3 billion deficit, it's only going to grow if we're not addressing and stopping the bleed that we're currently dealing with.
Yeah, no, and people listening right now, because I know you said your website is up, if you could give that out real quick, just so people could go check out your website and donate if they'd like to.
Absolutely. Well, the website is LaToya, the number 4, Maryland.com.
Okay. LaToya4,
Maryland.com.
All right,
yes.
You go there. Also, the hearing again tonight, 7 p.m., Early Heights Fire Station. I just want to make sure people know exactly how they could support you this evening. So, yes, I think when it comes to the budget, you're going to have people pushing back on this, because a lot of us have been talking on this show here about whether or not they're going to raise taxes this session. I can't see it happening any other way unless we have strong people like yourself in Annapolis that tells Democrats, especially Governor Wes Moore, that this agenda that they want just cannot be completed with the money we don't have.
Let me tell you something, Kim. Last legislative session, they passed over 250 bills that were related to fee increases. We can't afford to be nickel and dimed any longer. I run a business. I'm tired of looking at my property tax bills, my fees going up for my business, my home. I mean, you know, I'm afraid that my kids won't be able to live in Maryland, because everything, we're being nickel and dimed at every corner.
Yeah.
And it's not fair to hardworking people. It's like we have to work twice as hard to get half as much.
Yeah. Now, speaking of kids, and I know you have good kids because I know that, but we do have some kids out here that are misguided for sure. Just recently, we learned that five juveniles were arrested for assaulting a police officer in Anne Arundel County. I know that that's still under investigation, so I won't have you comment directly on that. But I think this goes towards what a lot of people are also discussing is a juvenile crime in this state.
Yep. Let me tell you, I'm a mental health therapist, so I've been working with kids pretty much for the last 25 years. But I used to run a group with children, and I remember these teenagers that were at-risk youth, and I remember the common thread with all of these kids. They said that they resented their parents for not setting a standard expectation, setting boundaries with them. And because they didn't have those boundaries set, they didn't have an out. They wanted to be able to say, oh, no, I can't do that. My mom or dad would kill me. We have to set boundaries with kids. We have to let them know that this is not acceptable behavior. And if you do participate in this behavior, you will be held accountable. Legislators are not holding our kids accountable.
Yeah.
They're getting light on crime, which is causing our children to be weak, to be here out in the world, you know, not respecting authority. What child would assault a police officer?
Especially 14 or 15.
When we were growing up, just the sight of a police officer would scare us half to death.
Yeah.
How do we get here where the kids now feel so emboldened to assault the highest level of authority in our community?
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, you've worked with at-risk teens before. Is there something we can do with the parents? Because I just, you know, for us, it's going to be so hard to do something with the juvenile directly. Obviously, we need a new secretary at DJS. That's another thing. But when it comes to the parents, is there a way that we can hold them not just accountable, but to change their ways? Because a lot of these juveniles, even those that were arrested, I'm sure they have younger siblings. And the last thing we want is for, you know, a whole crew of these individuals to be out there doing what they do. What can we do in that spot?
Well, what I'm going to say is, and it's probably going to be sensitive to some people, but I've worked in juvenile detention centers. I've worked in foster care. I've worked with kids across a variety of spectrums and mental health, all of that. It is the same story, but a different face.
Okay.
Poverty, parents that aren't involved, parents who are passive, parents who may have substance use issues where they're not really supervising their children, holding them accountable. And I think parents just need to take an honest look at themselves, because kids don't turn out this way on their own.
Yeah.
It's the adults. There is something that we're not doing, and we're failing our children.
Yeah. No.
And this isn't a prison to pipeline. This is a cradle to pipe prison issue. It starts at home.
Yeah. And that's, I think people need to understand that and really, you know, focus that way. And hopefully we'll see that in Annapolis this time around. I wonder, because I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm hoping that you're getting in there and you can, you know, say a lot of these things. But I wonder what we could do to convince Governor Wes Moore that Vincent Schiraldi has got to go.
You know what really disappoints me about Governor Wes Moore is that he was an at-risk youth.
Yeah.
He had an intervention in his teenage years that saved his life and put him on this trajectory.
Great point.
That's why he's governor today. So why is it that you're going light and you're allowing these bills to fail these kids where the very interventions that helped you could potentially help these kids? I was also one of those kids. I was sent to an alternative school. I was kicked out of public school. And they introduced us to a Scared Straight program, and it scared me straight. I wouldn't be in this chair today if it weren't for me being held accountable as a teenager. And neither would be Westmore would not be governor had he not been held accountable for his actions.
No. Wow. You know what? I never even thought about it that way, because I talked about how he talks about how education changed his life, because we don't do a whole lot when it comes to education in this state. But I didn't think about that. He did say that he was going back and forth within the juvenile detention system. I didn't even think about that part, LaToya. Again, as you're listening, LaToya for Maryland, the number 4Maryland.com. Visit her website. There's a vacancy in District 31. They have a hearing this evening at 7 p.m. at Early Heights Fire Station. When it comes to the legislative issues, what's at the top of your list there, LaToya?
Definitely the budget. You know, I want to make sure that citizens are able to live, take care of themselves and their families. I want us to support small businesses. The problem is that we have so much government spending and government handouts, but where does our real revenue come from? Supporting small businesses. And I've had the honor, the total honor, and I'm going to say this without getting too sensitive, but I've spent the past year really committed to working with combat veterans and families. And what I have learned about the difficulties that our veterans have with accessing health care, accessing resources that they're entitled to, the people that served our country and put their lives on the line, I want us to support veterans and their families far better than we're doing right now. Obviously, education. You know, I think Governor Westmore, I think it was just yesterday that he put the blueprint funding on pause. So I'm actually glad that they came to their senses that we just simply cannot afford it.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully that will not be an issue that's debated in this upcoming legislative session, because we just simply can't afford it. There's nothing in there that gives us any performance outcomes.
Right.
You know, it's all spending, but not telling us what we're going to get in return.
Yeah. And I also saw in some of the middle school and high schools it required increasing class sizes. And I thought, okay, well... Look, I was a kid not too long ago, and I do understand that if you have more kids in a classroom, you've got more behavioral issues and you got more problems when you're not able to educate the kids if there were less in that classroom.
Right.
So I'm glad that that is being put on hold. You know what? I know all the works that you've been doing with veterans and others because I follow you on social media. I want to make sure people can check out your social media. What are your handles? Is that like Facebook, Instagram?
Yep. So Instagram is LaToya _Congolo. And my Facebook, I haven't changed yet, but I will, because I did just come off of the Board of Education run.
Yeah.
So that was my last campaign. But it still says LaToya, the number 4BOE.
But spell your last name, because a lot of people probably will not be able to spell that. That's why you can spell it.
It's so funny, because I probably have the hardest name to pronounce, but in Anne Arundel County, that difficult name is known, and it stands 7 feet tall. But it's N is in Nancy, K-O-N-G-O-L-O, and the N is silent. It's Congolo. So just to kind of let people know that.
Yes,
make it a little easier for them.
Yes. All right. Well, we're going to come up here on a break, and then I want to come back. And I want you to really, you know, because we talked about why you're running and, of course, the legislative issues that are important to you. But even when we're looking towards the future, you know, I think that's what many of us are thinking about. It's like, what are the solutions to some of these problems that we have? And what could the future of Maryland really look like? I mean, I always hear these buzzwords on the left, you know, reimagine this and do this. You know, sometimes the wheel isn't broken. So I don't know why we're trying to fix it. But I know that there are issues where we can do things a bit better. So we get back. Let's talk about the future and the outlook here, because I want people to understand that there could be better solutions. But not only that, there could be a better quality of life in Maryland.
Right.
You know, all these taxes, all these fees, the illegal immigrants, you know. Just everything that we're seeing on a daily basis, the crime. I think that our future is bright here, but we got to put individuals
with
like
the right
you in
people.
Office.
With the right people, it can be bright.
Absolutely. We'll talk to LaToya Congolo coming up next. All right. Good morning. We are joined in studio with LaToya Congolo. There is an open seat in District 31, and this open seat needs to be filled with someone that actually has the credentials, the resume, and the skills to make sure that we, the people, are represented properly in Annapolis. I think I'm right on that, right, LaToya?
You are absolutely right.
Okay, good. Because I, at this point, you know, like I said, we've got some people up there doing a great job, but not everybody. So let's get more people up there. Before the break, we were talking about so many different issues. I also was asking about the future. I think when I think about the future most, LaToya, I do think about the fact that we, the constituents, we don't seem to have that relationship that I think we sometimes need with some of our delegates and state senators to make sure they know exactly where we stand on the issues. How can we strengthen that going forward?
Well, I can tell you that I remember voting for my delegate because he drove past my house and he had a bumper sticker or a magnet on his car and he waved to me. That was the extent of it. And I think that a lot of people don't know who they're voting for. They don't even know who their delegates are. But I feel like we need to do a better job with being out in the community and actually reaching people. I want us to have full transparency. If I were to ask you now, how many bills did your delegate have passed or how many bills they sponsored in the last legislative session, you wouldn't know.
Well, I'm
don't
a
even
little
know.
Different. Yeah, I'm yeah. a little.
I don't even, well, yeah, even yeah. me. I mean, yeah. they're Republicans. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't even know.
I mean,
and I bet you can ask anyone that question. They don't know what their delegate did to represent
true.
Them.
So true. So true. I usually have to call my friend Glenn Gilhar. He'll usually
right,
tell
right.
me.
Yo, Glenn knows everybody and everything.
Yeah, yeah. That's usually what I do. But you're right about that. That relationship isn't there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's across the board, state, federal, you know, you name it. I think that's important. And mm-hmm. I think that's the only way, as you're mentioning, that you're going to know exactly where we stand.
Right.
Is if you actually have that relationship with us.
Right.
And there's so many times where you're not in session. Where you could be making that effort, and people
right.
sometimes still don't do that.
I have not heard of a town hall. I want to have town hall meetings.
Good.
I want to engage the community. I thrive off of that. That, to me, is the best part of it, is having those conversations with people. And I look forward to that part, is being able to help people solve their problems or access resources. I'm a social worker, so for me, that's my life's work. And I'm going to do that and do it at an accelerated pace as a delegate, because I've built relationships around the community, and I want to help people, and I want them to know who I am and that I'm willing to work hard for them.
Well, good, good. We definitely need that. Again, LaToya4Maryland.com. That's number four. You can check out her website. And we got a caller here that wants to ask you a question, LaToya. Mark in Baltimore, did you have a question for LaToya?
Yes, good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
You all, shalom. And go Ravens tomorrow afternoon, by the way. I'm a big
Yes.
Okay, but the reason I have a question is, I understand as of this past Wednesday, new law went into effect concerning the prohibition of plastic bags in stores in Annapolis or in Arundel County.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Baltimore City, and it was real bad since they banned the bags. Paper bags don't work that well, especially if they get wet, and they claim it's for the environment. Ms. Victoria, what do you think about banning plastic bag usage in stores? I don't know whether that's in the county or just Annapolis, or what's the situation?
No, it's actually in Arundel County. Yeah,
oh, wow.
So, yeah,
well, Mark, thank you so much for that,
yep,
that question.
We have the plastic bag ban. We have to either bring recyclable bags into the stores, or we look like we're stealing because we have a handful of merchandise
yep.
that we're walking out because we refuse to pay the fee.
Yep.
And again, that's another example of us having being nickeled and dimed. So, and I'm with you. I'm fed up with my paper bags busting and groceries ending up on the ground as I'm walking to my car.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is another example of increased fees that we're seeing, and these laws are being passed by people who just, you know, they don't care. They don't have a budget. We
right.
have an unlimited budget.
Right. I mean, we have the same thing in Baltimore County. And, you know, of course, I ran against Johnny O on the congressional run. And a lot of people kept asking. They were like, well, was he responsible? I was like, he had a ceremony patting himself on the back about it. He was fine with it. And it is. And that's a part of this, right? We don't want to be nickel and dimed. And we do not want to see, because as far as we know, we had a surplus not too long ago. And now we're headed towards this $3 billion deficit. LaToya, I hope that you get in the seat and you can do something about it. Again, tell people where they need to be tonight.
All right. We need you all to show up. We need strong support tonight. Where the public hearing is going to be held by the Anne Arundel County Republican Central Committee at 7 p.m. at Early Heights Fire Station located in Severna Park. We need you there. We want you to hear from all the candidates, you know, so that way you can make an informed decision. Know who is willing to work for you. And, you know, I look forward to seeing you there.
All right. Well, you know what? I got to show up. I said I'm going to help
out.
So I better be there.
All right.
Right.
You hear it, guys. Show up. Kim is going to be in the house.
Yeah. I don't like to leave the house after 6 o'clock, I'm going to be honest with you, especially now that it's so dark outside.
Well, we're excited now. We'd love to see you there tonight.
No, I'll be there tonight. LaToya Cagolo, I really appreciate you coming in today, and I do hope that you win this seat. You deserve it
more than
anybody I know.
Thank you. I want to work for the people, and I'm excited. I can't wait to do the work.
All right. Thank you, LaToya. Coming up next, we're going to get into our poll question of the day. Do you think Mike Johnson is going to be elected speaker on the first round? Go to WCBM.com. Take that poll question. It is brought to you by Renovation Real Estate. Again, that is our next conversation. And don't forget, tonight, 7 p.m., Early Heights Fire Station. We got to make sure LaToya gets in the seat. That's important. All right. Look at me. I do not like leaving the house after 6 o'clock, but I'm going to do it tonight. I'm going to do it to support LaToya Cagolo. She's running for this vacancy in District 31. Don't forget, the hearing is tonight, 7 p.m. at Early Heights Fire Station. I've got friends texting me on my phone right now saying they're showing up in support of LaToya. I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it. We need actual, true Republicans, conservatives in Annapolis. We have some there. We need more. We absolutely need more. Texter pointed out that the plastic bag ban in Baltimore County is brought up by a Republican. I know. It hurts my heart, Texter. It hurts my heart. This is what I'm talking about. Just think. Imagine a Republican decided to put a plastic bag ban on We the People that actually charges us a fee. There's nothing Republican or conservative about that. Nothing whatsoever. And I know there are some people that hate that you mention it, but that is true. And then Johnny O had a ceremony celebrating it. Then his father gets out there telling early voters, oh, he had nothing to do with it. Yeah, right. We had to show him the pictures of the ceremony. It's like, I don't know, Johnny O. Sr. Here's your son having a signing ceremony. Invited all his friends. And then he changed his tune. So, you know, it is what it is. But again, congratulations to Johnny Olszewski. He's being sworn in on Capitol Hill today. Also going on Capitol Hill, Speaker Mike Johnson is going to find out whether or not he's going to continue to be the speaker. This is huge. It is huge. President Trump has endorsed Speaker Mike Johnson for the position. He believes Mike Johnson will carry out his agenda and make sure that he supports him 100%. There are a lot of people that are unsure, and then there are a lot of people that believe that he will not handle it. Today, WCBM's poll question of the day, brought to you by Renovation Real Estate, is up right now at WCBM.com. The question is, do you think Mike Johnson will be elected in the first round vote? So I'm going to tell you what I put on there. I, yes or no, because I don't think it's going to be in the first round. Remember, he needs 218 votes, okay, which means he can only afford to lose one vote. Representative Thomas Massey has made it very clear that he is a no vote. We have those that are still undecided. Now, I gotta refresh X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, to see if Congressman Andy Harris is still undecided. But this is why it would have been so great for Congressman Matt Gaetz to have been sworn into the 119th Congress and then at least made sure that he voted for Speaker Mike Johnson, as President Trump wants everyone to do. And that would have helped us out a little bit in this situation. But if you noticed, last night was the big premiere of his show on One America News. And he actually had Representative Thomas Massey on. And he was asking him, you know, if not Mike Johnson, then who? And that's still the question today. I'm going to read you some of the back and forth on that. Just so you know, when it comes to the poll question on WCBM.com, 52% of you say yes, you believe Speaker Mike Johnson will be elected in the first round. 48% of you say no. And I'm in that camp with the 48%. I don't think it's going to be on round one. I think we're going to have those that are going to hold out, whether if it's for political purposes, whether if it's for, you know, just to send a message. I don't know. but I am unsure if he's going to get this in round one. Now, there are probably some Republicans in some seats, because remember, we've got still a lot of Republicans in these swing districts, and perhaps they don't want it to look like that they're voting for Speaker Johnson, up front, like the Trump endorsed pick, because they're in a swing district that could possibly be anti-Trump. You know what I mean? There's a lot that goes into this, and that's what's so unfortunate about it, right? That's what's unfortunate, because you want to get this done, and you also want to send a message, I think, to Democrats that, look, we are united, and we're not playing the games. We're not about the shenanigans. That's the kind of message that I would have said, but I don't think everybody wants to do that. And if you're in a swing district, of course, you don't want to do that, and you don't want to look like you're supporting Trump in any way. That's why this is a problem. This is a problem, but I could be totally wrong about this. I know there are a lot of people that are talking about DeAndra Walker also being, right now, she's the interim Baltimore County executive. I didn't have a chance to look for it, because I told you I wanted to look for the audio, and I'll just tell you, it was with Chief McCullough, and they were talking about the mass shooting in Towson, and Chief McCullough had said that she was the next county executive, and it was like, it was really quickly, and it was in the live audio, and I know that they had it on Fox 45's Facebook page, and maybe I could go and try to find it over the weekend. But I remember noting it, like, wait a minute, why did he just say DeAndra Walker's the next county executive if they're supposed to be looking for someone? Well, anyways, they do still have, according to them, they still have the five candidates, and they'll have a decision on January 6th. That's what they're saying. So we'll talk about it then, but I appreciate everybody sending it over, especially Val McDonough, because I know that this is a huge concern. Now, believe it or not, you had a Newt Gingrich weigh in on the speaker's race on Twitter. He says, I do not understand what the contrarian House Republicans think they will gain by opposing Speaker Mike Johnson. They have no one who can get more votes. They risk crippling President Trump's electoral win on January 6th. And they are, in effect, allies of the Democrats if they do this. I challenge them to explain what their endgame is other than making noise. Again, that was Newt Gingrich on X. He posted that on December 31st at 6:17 a.m. Congressman Thomas Massie then responded and said, challenge accepted. Here's what he said here. He said, first, let me note that the Vote for Mike campaign is not trying to make the case that Mike Johnson is endowed with the qualities necessary to lead our conference. Even if you have limited yourself here to procedural justifications for his speakership rather than telling us why he is a good or capable leader. Even if Mike's entire goal is to do everything Trump wants without debate or question, which I would argue is not healthy for the institution of Congress, he's not going to be good at it. He already demonstrated this month that he won't tell the president what is achievable and what is not achievable in the House. Then he lacks situational awareness himself to know what can pass and what cannot pass. Again, this is Representative Thomas Massie. He says, number one, what do we hope to gain? A competent speaker who has the will and the ability to capitalize on this once-in-a-decade opportunity. Johnson is not up for this task. Also, we want a speaker who inspires the public and who can make our case in the media so we can keep the majority for the second half of Trump's term. Johnson nearly led us to the minority in what was a banner year for Trump. He is certain to lose us the majority in 2026. Okay, so this is number one for Thomas Massie. He's saying that Speaker Johnson is not somebody that can rally the troops. Now, I will say Speaker Johnson is rather quiet. I know he talks a lot about his faith. To me, he's not the showboater. He's not a show pony. I don't think he'll ever be that. So I will agree that he doesn't rally the troops. Kevin McCarthy did a better job at that, but Kevin McCarthy has seniority. He had a lot of money behind him. He was well-seasoned in that position, and it's not the first time that he ran for speaker, and he had a lot of power. So, yes, he had, somewhat of a louder voice than Mike Johnson. I can agree to that. What he's saying about the midterms is interesting. Now, I've noted on this show that I don't think they did enough for Neil Parrott in District 6 you know, I'm not going to, you know, go into my seat. It is what it is. But Neil Parrott didn't lose by much. And by the time they showed up to help him, I thought, this is a little too late. And I remember texting his communications director, Niels, and I was like, wait a minute. Are they just now getting to town? Are they just now hosting fundraisers for him? There was another fundraiser, believe it or not, towards the end of the campaign. And I want to say it was either the end of September or October. And it was being hosted by the MDJOP. And it was in Montgomery County. I kid you not, because I started making phone calls. And it was to support President Trump. And the only way I found out about this fundraiser is because there's someone on my team was actually at a meeting where they announced it. Had she not been there, I probably wouldn't have heard about it. But it was a fundraiser to support President Trump. And from my knowledge, Neil Parrott wasn't invited. Again, this is the last leg. This is the Maryland GOP. And they're supporting President Trump, who, from what I could tell, didn't have a problem raising money. And your goal was to make sure that you flipped, I guess I would hope, at least one seat in Maryland since the redistricting. Yet Neil Parrott wasn't on the program for that event. And so I was like, so I made some calls and I'm like, wait a minute. Whoa. Why is it Neil at that fundraiser? Why isn't he benefiting from that fundraiser, you know, just himself? What is going on? And they said, you know, some roundabout way, this is what they decided between, I guess, the RNC and the MDGOP. And I thought, well, this is stupid. You have a chance to get this guy in, and he's not even on the agenda. He's not on the program for this huge fundraiser where you're each ticket was like $2,000 or something like that. You're having all this money's coming into this event and you don't have Neil Parrott there as a headliner? Terrible decision. And nobody could respond to that, of course. But these are some of the things that happened behind the scenes, and it's a shame and it's sad. And I'm one of those people where it's like, yeah, of course, you know, we tried our darndest in my race. It was tough. It was difficult. But when you see somebody like Neil Parrott, a great guy, he's got, you know, a great resume. He's qualified for the position. You know, you're not going to get, this isn't somebody that's a showboater or a show pony. He's not going to the Hill to get media or press. You know, that's not him. He's there to go to work. He's a workhorse. And you're telling me you couldn't get behind that 100%? What was the problem? What was the breakdown? Me, yeah, I can see. I'm a little bit of a loudmouth here and there. I got you. But you couldn't get past all the nonsense to make sure that you gave Neil Parrott 100%. Then, of course, they did go over there and they did sign waving. They did knock doors and things like that. But Neil had a great team already assembled. So by the time that they were showing up, it was kind of like, oh, hi. You know, you already knew that this district's race was going to be that close. The poll came out showing Neil ahead of Delaney, and it still wasn't like, oh, let's jump into action. I was confused by that race. I'll get back to what I was talking about, but I just wanted to put that out there. Because sometimes you need to know what's going on behind the scenes. Sometimes you need to know. Representative Thomas Massey, another reason why he says he can't vote for Speaker Mike Johnson. He says, no one can get more votes is a silly thing to say. It's somewhat ridiculous to assert that Mike Johnson is the only member of Congress electable to Speaker. He was only electable the first time because he hadn't held any type of leadership position, nor had he ever fought for anything. So no one disliked him, and everyone was tired of voting. He won by being the least objectable candidate, and he no longer possesses that title. He also says he risked crippling Trump's win. This is a terrible argument and a scare tactic. He believes there is no legal argument for nullifying the national election if a speaker is not in place on January 6th. He also says when Newt Gingrich said they are allies of the Democrats, Thomas Massey says, actually, it is Mike Johnson who routinely passes major legislation, whether it's Ukraine, the omnibus bill, FISA, spying with only a majority of Republicans or minority of Republicans and relying on those Democrats. He says he also owes this current speakership to the Democrats. Here's a roll call for the motion table, motion to vacate last summer. And then he uploaded this link. Thomas Massey said, in closing, the emperor has no clothes, and the entire conference knows it, but few will say it. The general public knows it, too. Please don't shoot the messenger. Again, this is Representative Thomas Massey on why he cannot vote for Speaker Mike Johnson. If you see there, he has no one that he has put forth in this conversation. He still has no idea who could get the vote. So there are people questioning this on this post. And so people are saying, okay, if not Speaker Johnson, then who? This is what everybody's asking him. He can't answer that. That's why I was wondering, and I asked Bruce earlier, that's why I was wondering, you know, does Thomas Massey feel as though he could be the speaker? Because who? Who the hell are you advocating for? I can't see it. People have said in the past, oh, Byron Donalds. Number one, Byron Donalds doesn't want it. Number two, we already know that he's most likely going to run for governor of Florida. Number three, he tried to be the speaker last time around and barely got 50 votes. Who, Thomas Massey? It sounds like an owl, right? Who? Who? He can't answer it. So that is the big question of the day brought to you by Renovation Real Estate. Do you think Mike Johnson will be elected on the first round vote? Again, it's split half and half on WCBM.com if you want to take part in that poll. If you want to weigh in, we still have time. 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. I believe, and maybe you disagree with me, but I believe that we need to look like we're very united on this front. And I believe that we need to make sure we send Democrats that are coming, even the freshman Democrats that are coming in now, we need to make sure they know this is Trump's house. Trump won the popular vote. Trump won all swing states. And what people voted for, they might not have voted for the man himself. They might not have voted for his mean tweets. But they voted for his agenda and his policies. And we want to make sure that those people that voted for President Trump that probably said at some point in their life they would never vote for this guy, we want to make sure that they feel like winners at the end of these 4 years. We want to make sure that we close the border. We want to make sure that we rein back all this reckless spending. We want to make sure that the crime and violence, if we can help in any way, we will help some of these inner cities, individual states. What's going on in New York? We want to make sure that we support our police. We want to make sure we support our first responders because we're down even firefighters and EMTs. We want to make sure that all those that voted for Trump that are probably being laughed at right now at home by their own family members, we want to make sure that they feel as though that their vote really, truly mattered. Because it did. Many of us supported President Trump from way back when, right? But those that woke up to the fact that the Democrats didn't care, they lied to them about, you know, President Biden even being capable of being the president. We want to make sure those people understand that, look, we understand what you were thinking when you went to the ballot and you pulled that lever for Trump. We understand that it might not have been easy for you. But we want to make sure that those things that you supported, that they get done. And as far as I'm concerned, we've got to do it in the first 2 years. So we don't have time for all this. If you want to weigh in, you can. Again, Speaker Mike Johnson, will he be voted in within the first round? We'll wait and see. All right, you know what that means. It is Friday. Kim Klasick Live is coming to a close for today. And then you have Rob Carson coming up next. Of course, we were talking about the big question of the day. I wish I would have done it a little bit earlier, but we weren't. You know what? We had a great conversation all day, so I don't feel that bad, you know. But the question of the day, brought to you by Renovation Real Estate on WCBM.com. Do you think Mike Johnson will be elected on the very first round vote? I said no. I did say no. And that is, it's not because I don't think he's going to not be the one to be elected. I do believe it's going to be Speaker Mike Johnson. I just think that there's going to be a lot of drama surrounding it. And don't forget, you know, when you have this kind of drama, and it doesn't have to even be just Representative Thomas Massey. It could be any member of Congress. People are able, or members, I should say, are able to fundraise off of all of this, right? So say you have like the first vote that goes in. He's not elected the very first vote, right? Speaker. We'll have every Democrat there in Congress. They'll send out an email immediately to all their donors saying, see, this is why the Republicans can't have the majority. Donate to me today, and we'll make sure we get more Democrats in the House by 2026, right? That's how they do it. And then the Republicans, they'll also fundraise off of the fact that he didn't get there in the very first vote. If they're in a swing district, they'll say, see, this is why we need to make sure that we don't support someone immediately that only says that they're going to support President Trump. And I agree. We can't do that because we have to make sure that we're objective at all times. Those are like the anti-Trumpers or those in the swing districts. Then the pro-Trumpers are like, see, this is why I don't think we're going to get our agendas completely accomplished. So this is what's going to happen. They all send out their fundraising emails because this is a fundraising opportunity. And this is politics. And I know I'm just preaching to the choir because I know all of you guys know how this works. So no, I don't think he's going to get in the first round. I think he is going to eventually get in. I guess I'm still just kind of confused on why Thomas Massie is just so hell-bent on being that thorn, right? Kind of like the Newt Gingrich pointed out. It's like, why do you want to be this contrarian? What do you gain politically out of this as a Republican? Because all of your constituents are like, I don't care what you guys do. At least get something done. At least close the border. At least do something about all the crime and violence. At least make sure that we don't have these national security threats like we obviously have. That's what the constituents are thinking. And so I guess I can't see how Thomas Massie makes it look really good for him. And maybe he doesn't care about that because he's in a safe district. But it's just, it's interesting, right? Very, very interesting. All right, here are the numbers here with the poll question of the day. Do you think Mike Johnson will be elected on the first round? 51% of you said no. Or 51% of you said yes. Excuse me. 49% of you said no. So it is very, very split. If you want to still take part, you can. WCBM.com. I can't wait to see so many of you at 7 o'clock in Anne Arundel County. Brian, as always, thank you for a great show. I'll talk to all of you tomorrow on Monday at 9 a.m.